It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon and welcome to the broadcast. I'm Brandon Dixon, working to reopen.
America wants to be open, and Americans want to be open.
President Trump has issued new guidelines on how to ease up on social distancing in areas where coronavirus is on the decline.
We are not opening all at once, but one careful step at a time.
Correspondent Stephen Portnoy has more on the three-phase approach.
Phase one begins with...
Dr. Deborah Birx says strict adherence to social distancing, including 6 feet of separation and face coverings, will be critical components in the first phase.
If the schools are already closed, they should remain closed.
The elderly and those with underlying conditions are being told not to leave home until phase three. But President Trump believes it won't be long, and that some states can reopen right away.
I think we're going very quickly now.
He says decisions on when to implement the three phases in the new guidelines will be left to governors.
I call it a beautiful puzzle. You have 50 pieces, all very different.
Dr. Anthony Fauci warns it's not game over just yet.
It may very well be, as we go the cycle around, that there'll be this virus that wants to come back to us.
Currently, the U.S. has more than 672,000 confirmed cases, more than 33,000 deaths, but also more than 56,000 recoveries. L.A. Mayor Eric Garcetti.
Deaths aren't statistics. They are stories. They aren't numbers. They are lives.
Well, one state that won't be reopening anytime soon, New York.
The New York pause policies, the close down policies, will be extended in coordination with other states to May 15th.
Governor Cuomo says that means the stay-at-home order will remain for at least another 4 weeks.
What happens after then? I don't know. We will see, depending on what the data shows.
Meanwhile, in the Keystone State, Governor Wolf is not quite ready to follow suit.
I understand and appreciate his extension through May 15th, but we have made no plan, and I have made no decision along any of those lines for Pennsylvania yet.
Both states have ordered all residents that go out in public to wear masks. Those directives go into effect this weekend. As many as 29 states will be reopening partially in the coming days. Ohio is among those. Governor Mike DeWine says they plan to open May 1st, but things won't be the same when they do.
The world that we're going to see is a different world.
He says people will have to wear masks and use more hand sanitizer to stop the spread. Ultimately, the decision on when to reopen states will be left up to each governor, according to President Trump.
I heard from a number of governors that said they're in very good shape. I also heard not only from the call, but I heard from some of the governors previous. And I think you'll have some very good things to report over the next few days about states opening up.
He told governors Thursday, you're going to call your own shots. Meanwhile, there's a new national hotspot for the virus. Reporter Adriana Diaz says a South Dakota plant has seen 600 workers get infected.
The Smithfield Foods plant is temporarily closed, but mechanic Tommy Duranicone was still asked to work as part of an essential team.
What's the level of fear right now?
8 to 10.
Out of 10?
Yeah, I had a coworker who quit. Because he was scared.
80 languages are spoken at the plant of nearly 4,000 employees. Most of them are immigrants.
It was really the only reason why we were above the poverty line.
Some credit the company for the ability to send their children, like this 20-year-old, to college. Her father, who didn't want to be interviewed, is symptomatic.
We're just running on the assumption that we're at least carrying the virus.
New at noon, China is refuting allegations that the pandemic may have originated in a lab near the city of Wuhan, where contagious samples were being stored. The country's foreign ministry spokesperson says there was no evidence that transmission began from the lab, and there was no scientific basis for such claims. The virus is widely believed to have originated with bats at a wildlife and seafood market in Wuhan, although a firm determination has yet to be made. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau says it'll be weeks more before opening the border with the U.S. can be considered due to the pandemic. So no crossing of the Peace Bridge anytime soon. Well, how do COVID cases go from mild to severe? Your weight may have something to do with it.
Health experts now say obesity is one of the most important predictors of the severity of coronavirus cases, even in young people. It's second only to older age. Data released by New York State finds asthma is not as great a risk as originally thought. Other common risk factors are diabetes and chronic heart disease.
That's CBS's Deborah Rodriguez reporting. Well, plenty of pies during the pandemic. Pizza Hut is donating 250,000 personal pan pizzas to feed hungry students, along with $500,000 in grants to educators. Teachers have to use the money to buy books and resources for students. Once they do that, they'll receive 25 coupons to distribute to kids for the pizzas. Hope in the hospital. Doctors and nurses in emergency rooms across the United States are stepping up their social media game to try to help patients stay in touch with their families who are banned from their bedside. Dr. Craig Spencer is an emergency room doctor in New York City.
It's nearly impossible to understand what family members are going through. Being able to provide some type of connection, even if it's as impersonal as Skype or a FaceTime video, I know means so much to so many people, to patients, to families, that if that's what we spend the majority or a big chunk of the time doing it, that is potentially having a bigger impact than a lot of the other stuff we're doing.
They're using Facebook Live and Zoom video chat to help families connect. And a New Jersey landlord is being showered with praise after giving his tenants a three-month break on their rent.
David exemplifies the spirit we need of people stepping up to make sure others can come out of this emergency stronger.
That's his town's mayor.
For us, it's just good business practice. We're believers that if you invest in the community and you're good community stewards, that's going to be good for you as a property owner.
He says he hopes it makes a difference for a lot more than his 12 rental families.
We asked them to pay it forward. So if they could go out and buy takeout from the restaurants or gift cards from the other small businesses or pay it forward to the local food bank we had. And for us, it's just the way we operate. It's the way we do business.
It cost the landlord $50,000. He's being called the hero of houses. Also ahead on the Noon Report, mandatory mask, pandemic politics in Pennsylvania, and upstate New York among the most vulnerable for the virus. First, a quick peek at the forecast from meteorologist Kevin Williams.
Well, good afternoon to all. We made it to the end of the week, but we're not quite through with winter yet. We've got another snow system to talk about. I'll do that coming up. We'll see you in 10 minutes.
Thank you, Kevin. Here's what's happening across New York and Pennsylvania. The mask mandate kicks in tonight at 8 in New York State.
You have a right for another person to take reasonable safeguards not to get infected.
Governor Cuomo extending protection measures in the Empire State.
I'm going to include public transportation systems, any operator of a public system, an operator of a private carrier, and for hire vehicles must wear a mask at all times.
Western New Yorkers like this man tell News 4 they're a fan of face masks.
I think it's a good idea, and I'm starting to see a lot more people wearing them now.
Helen Titteris with the Niagara Frontier Transportation Authority says,
we are very, very excited, thrilled, actually, because this will make it more universally acceptable and clearer.
She says a bus driver now has the option to not pick someone up if they don't have a face covering. In PA, you have until Sunday. But if you go to the store without a face mask, you can be kicked out. Many businesses, including Scarfalotto's grocery store in Susquehanna County, say they're ready.
Ever since the first whiff of this, we start cleaning our carts immediately, sanitizing with bleach and disinfectant soaps.
The owner says he's appalled at what he sees his customers do, and he thinks the masks are a good idea.
We've had people come down with masks hanging off their nose, not changing the gloves. They leave from one store to another in their car with their gloves on, and they're just causing more of a ruckus.
Commonwealth stores can face fines if they let people in without masks. Several upstate counties in our listening area are among the most vulnerable in New York to the coronavirus. Broome, Seneca, Allegheny, Otsego, Delaware, and Orleans are all among the top 10, according to a study done by Cornell University. The research takes in consideration the percentage living in a nursing home, jail or prisons, households that span three generations, and people with disabilities. While Pennsylvania Republicans are pushing to let some businesses get back to work, state Democrats oppose. U.S. Senator Bob Casey says he sides with Governor Wolf.
We shouldn't be taking advice from public officials or business leaders at this time. We have to listen to the public health professionals because we got to win this war And the war is the war against the virus to stop the spread.
GOP lawmakers insist Wolf has the most severe restrictions of any state in the nation. Western New York's largest suburb will likely reopen from the shutdown in stages. Amherst Town Supervisor Brian Culpa tells News 4.
We know that we're going to need to trim our budget and to trim expenses to make sure that we can offset some of that revenue loss. We're looking at the best ways to do that. We're also looking at ways to jumpstart our tax base, get new buildings up, get new assessed property value added to the mix.
Copeland says the town is putting together a recovery and reopening plan right now. School superintendents across New York are getting weary with the state's pause program, where it's only announced every 2 weeks that everything is closed 2 more weeks.
After May 15th, another 2-week pause really becomes quite inefficient. So I would think that depending on what happens with the health and safety of the world and this community and this state, that the next announcement should be where we stand for the remainder of the year, because 2 weeks from there will take you to almost June 1st.
Niagara Falls School Superintendent Mark Lorry says he's supported the program to this point, but not after the next couple of weeks.
Rites of passage events. I'm talking about graduations, proms, post-proms, class days, moving forward ceremonies. So I think stretching until May 15th is about the end of where I'm comfortable saying, as a superintendent, 2-week blocks are good.
Restaurants and wedding venues also feeling New York pause weariness. Churches in New York and PA are seeing a huge shift in their rites during the health crisis. In some cases, it's flat out illegal.
When you can go to a large retailer, when you can go through to a liquor store, when you can go to the casino and the doors of the church are closed, that presents major constitutional problems.
Ryan Tucker is with Alliance Defending Freedom.
Even in times of national pandemic, we don't lose our First Amendment freedoms.
He says they're getting 100 calls a day from churches all across the U.S. Pennsylvania's Department of Human Services has begun an emergency SNAP benefit issuance. Payments include a supplemental increase for both March and April and will continue to be issued for current SNAP households through April 29th. Well, April would normally be a busy month for touring college campuses, but thanks to coronavirus concerns, that's not a possibility. Until now, Elmira College is pushing back their enrollment deadline and doing virtual campus tours. Dean of Admissions Jackie Van Brunt tells 18 News.
We understand, I'm a parent of a college-age student, and I understand that some parents might be concerned about sending their students far away from home right now in the fall.
She says prospective students can look into everything from touring housing to everyday lectures. The college is also hosting interviews with both current students and staff for prospective students at home. Members of a Binghamton University fraternity lending a helping hand to first responders amid the outbreak.
We saw how the first responders and hospital staff have been staying on the front lines fighting this pandemic, so we wanted to at least provide some food for them.
Thomas Grosso tells WBNG he and his brothers from BU's Sigma Alpha Epsilon donated pizza and cases of water to the local police and fire departments.
This is our second home for the students, so, you know, we love to give back to the community. The firemen are great, the police officers are great, so it's our honor to do it.
Mayor Rich David, grateful for the frat's generosity.
I want people to see what they did. I want people to watch this story and said, you know what, I can do something like that too.
Time next for the 2-minute drill in sports, a horse tournament, last dance doc, and world eating championship. Take it away, Sonny.
Well, thank you, Brandon. Yep, there's sports. Utah Jazz guard Mike Conley, the winner of the NBA's Horse Challenge, he knocked off Chicago Bulls guard Zach LaVine in the finals of the virtual tournament last night. Conley beat retired star Chauncey Billups in the semifinals. LaVine took out WNBA star Allie Quigley in the other semi. State Farm sponsored the event and offered a prize pool exceeding $200,000 to charities working in response of the coronavirus pandemic. ESPN's 10-part documentary about Michael Jordan and the 90s Bulls, set to begin airing this weekend. During an interview on Good Morning America, Jordan shared what he remembered about the Bulls, their championship season in 1997-98.
Phil started off the year by saying this is the last dance, and we played it that way. Sad as it sounded at the beginning of the year,
we try to rejoice and enjoy the year and finish it off the right way.
The docuseries scheduled to debut on Sunday. Major League Baseball providing meals for kids who rely on their schools to eat. Dozens of players have raised more than $1 million for the Home Plate Project. Among those are the Yankees' DJ LeMahieu and Brett Gardner, and the Mets' Steven Matz and Michael Wacha. The NBA and WNBA have teamed up with Fanatics to launch cloth face coverings featuring all 30 NBA and 12 WNBA team logos available on the league's apparel websites. All of the proceeds will benefit hunger relief organizations Feeding America in the U.S. and Second Harvest in Canada. The WNBA draft is tonight. And Major League Eating is coming back with an eating tournament featuring Joey Chestnut, the number one eater in the world. The competition kicks off at 7 o'clock tonight on the Major League Eating's YouTube channel and other online platforms. The bracket-style elimination tournament will feature 8 of the world's top eaters vying for the top spot from home via video. The winner will take home $5,000. The league is donating $10,000 to the hunger relief group Feeding America. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Delfiette.
Great stuff as always, Sonny. Thanks so much. Still to come on this noon report, winter weather won't relent. Honoring God and government during trying times, and an incredible story of survival.
Discerning truth in all the noise is not just a matter of public health, it's also our Christian duty. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. The information age is full of both pluses and minuses, especially during a time of national crisis. Among the blessings we can count is the ability of many of us to work from home, the ability to stay in touch with people we cannot visit. The main minus, though certainly not the only one, is the constant flow of news, headlines, and social media posts, some true, some false, some helpful, some very unhelpful, and even misleading. Even before the coronavirus was given the name pandemic, misinformation was being passed on by both major media outlets and personal social media accounts. Misleading voices on both the left and the right confidently asserted that the virus really wasn't that bad. More than one conservative talk show host, motivated to keep the president's wins front and center, compared COVID-19 to the common cold or the seasonal flu. And more than a few liberal voices also downplayed the seriousness of COVID-19, apparently hoping to seize an opportunity to portray Trump's travel restrictions to China as racist or otherwise misguided. After Samaritan's Purse set up a temporary hospital in Central Park to treat coronavirus patients, the Daily Beast ran a hit piece warning of, quote, substandard care and discrimination, chiding the Christian ministry and its president, Franklin Graham, for their alleged spotty record. Given the actual record of Samaritan's Purse, the article was pure fear-mongering. Still, it paled in comparison to a horrendous op-ed by Catherine Stewart in the New York Times that blamed evangelicals for, and I quote here, paving the way to coronavirus hell by denying science. She also accused us of looking to faith healers and miracle cures instead of medical experts. It was vicious, historically ignorant slander that was published in America's newspaper of record. Brad Littlejohn made a key point over at Mere Orthodoxy. Quote, this virus has surely come as a judgment on our divided post-truth society. Judgment does not merely punish, he pointed out, it reveals. What COVID-19 has revealed in America is a society that has reached a point of crippling mutual incomprehension and distrust that runs so deep it leaves few, if any, shared handholds for common knowledge informing common action. At all times, but especially during a pandemic, some degree of common knowledge and common action are essential for a society. How can Christians, people committed to truth, navigate this misinformation age? Who's right? Who's not? How do we know? And how can we be catalysts toward the renewal of a critical national resource? Trust. Well, an essential part of the answer, and an essential part of a Christian worldview, is discernment. According to Paul's prayer for the church at Philippi, love abounds best when accompanied by truth and discernment. Discernment involves both wisdom and will, the wisdom to evaluate truth claims and the will to really understand the reality of our fallen world, which includes evaluating truth claims beyond whether or not it makes our side look good and their side look bad. Bearing false witness is a sin. Truth must take precedent over wanting something to be so or not wanting it to be so. And finally, a necessary ingredient of Christian discernment, has to be confidence in God's sovereignty. Fear, on the other hand, spoils discernment. Discernment won't put an end to misinformation overnight, of course, but it can slow its infection rate. And as with the actual pandemic, that could make a world of difference. For Breakpoint, I'm John Stone Street.
You're listening to the Noon Report for Friday, April 17th.
And welcome back to another edition of Capital Connection. Fridays during the Noon Report, we give you, the listener, direct connection to what's happening in Albany and Harrisburg with the experts on the issues at the state capitals. They are Jason McGuire of New Yorkers for Constitutional Freedoms and Michael Geer at the Pennsylvania Family Institute. Gentlemen, it's been a couple weeks since the programs aired. It is great to be back in action, and there's lots to talk about on the COVID-19 front. Jason, you have written a recent article on how we can honor God and government during these trying times in real practical ways. Tell our listeners how we can do that.
Yeah, I know there's a lot of concern out there right now regarding the role of government and whether or not the churches have the right to gather. And there's this conflict that we sense, some tension. And so I put a little statement out there. I wanted us to be aware of the fact that there is a way for us, a path forward for us to honor both God and government in this. Government is not the enemy. Is it true that sometimes they encroach upon liberties and freedoms, and maybe even in this instance or in this crisis? Sure. But at the same time, they're also a partner in trying to protect public safety. And so I think there are some things we can do. For example, our organization is not encouraging churches to meet in their sanctuaries. We think that is a wise step that government is taking to reduce the spread of this coronavirus. But we think that the government goes too far when it says that it cannot allow drive-in services, that there's a reasonable accommodation to be made for a person's religious liberty, and there's a way forward where I think Christians can honor both God and government and not view government as the enemy in the midst of COVID-19.
And we'll give the website a very good article. We encourage folks to go to your website and read that. Michael, we had Alliance Defending Freedom on this week. They're fielding over 100 calls a day from churches and others from the faith community about how some of their religious freedoms might be undermined in the midst of this national emergency. This goes much further than requiring people to wear masks, for instance. How are you counseling? I know you do a lot of good work in this realm. How are you counseling the faith community in the midst of this pandemic?
Well, very similarly to what Jason just said, our attorneys at the Independence Law Center have been getting calls from churches as well. Jeremy and Randy, our attorneys there, have been counseling with pastors about, again, government is not our enemy in this situation. There are religious liberty concerns, and we're going to be hosting a webinar next Tuesday for pastors and churches on this topic, and hosting Kelly Shackelford from the First Liberty Institute about the religious liberty implications related to the COVID crisis. That's the law firm that represented that Kentucky church that had their drive-in service shut down, and that was way too far of what government did there.
Yeah. Speaking of that, Jason, you have asked the state for clarification on drive-in religious services, whether they be at movie theaters or whatnot. We mentioned the case out in Louisville, which has become a national story. Have you heard yet from Albany? And if so, what did they tell you?
Well, we've heard nothing official out of Albany as of yet. We've had some back-channel communications with members of the governor's office. But what's really happening now is at a local level, Chemung County, for example, the county executive is saying that churches there cannot have drive-in services. The Chemung County order is going beyond what the governor's intention is. And so we're trying to sort that out. And thankfully, I think our friends Alliance Defending Freedom are going to be weighing in very shortly. And I think we'll see some positive developments in that front.
Michael, turning the page a little bit, you've petitioned the governor to stop with elective surgeries like abortions during the crisis. Seems odd that that is happening. I know a number of states have done away with this, but Pennsylvania is one of those ones that have yet to take action here. How much of a difference do you think that this petition drive will ultimately make?
Well, we've had many thousands of signatures from folks across Pennsylvania calling on our governor to shut down elective abortions in Pennsylvania. All other elective surgeries have been shut down under the governor's order, which says that non-life-sustaining organizations and businesses cannot operate, and yet Planned Parenthood, which is clearly a non-life-sustaining entity when they do abortions, is allowed to remain. It's important to raise our voices to the governor. He is a strong ally of Planned Parenthood. That's been true for years, but the governor needs to hear the voice of the people about this, and the people need to be educated about where their governor stands on this life and death issue.
Governor Cuomo making news this week when he declared past the pandemic or the peak of the pandemic, God didn't do this, saying I did this or we did this, the state of New York. That's not playing well in religious circles, is it?
No, you know, it was chilling when I heard the governor make the statement, the number is down because we brought the number down. God did not do that. And, you know, we have to remember that, you know, we read through biblical history, we see that when leaders like Nebuchadnezzar and others spoke, they really spoke on behalf of a nation, if you will. And I think that we sometimes forget that today, that we have elected leaders, representatives, and when they make declarative statements like that, really speaking to the arrogance of man, rather than our need and our dependence upon God, they're really speaking for us as well. And what I mean by that is that there are blessings of obedience and curses of disobedience. And when our leaders spurn God rather than follow after faith, then there is a price for the people to pay.
Yeah.
And I want to see our elected officials that are declaring their need for God and dropping to our knees. And if our governor won't do it, then the people of this state need to do it.
Yeah, it surprised me. I wonder if he misspoke or did he offer any clarification after the fact? Because every one of those press conferences, he really talks up his faith. Has he said anything as kind of an apology for that or a clarification for those remarks?
Not at all. Not at all. And I think that's the problem you see with the faith of Andrew Cuomo is he likes to, on one hand, portray himself as a Catholic individual. On the other hand, he is abortion expansion Andrew Cuomo. It is during Holy Week when he introduces gay marriage or the original abortion expansion legislation in those respective years. And yet at the same time, we'll often speak of his Catholic faith. And so you see kind of the split sides of Andrew Cuomo that comes out at moments like this.
Very interesting. Michael, election officials to say are overwhelmed might be the understatement of the year. You've got, on one hand, historic election reforms, and then on the other hand, you've got just this onslaught of absentee and mail-in ballots cast in the Commonwealth this year. They've moved the primary, but even now, many are saying we're not ready for a June primary. What say you?
Yeah, the big changes that came with the new law was going to be a challenge for election officials to begin with. And then you add COVID-19 on top of it with absenteeism from many of the employees, the social distancing and other things that are added onto it. It does put into question the ability to pull off a mail-in ballot program in the June 2nd elections.
Yeah.
It's going to be a problem. There's no question.
Well, let's spend the last minute or so that we have guys talking about reopening New York and Pennsylvania. Both states are part of this seven-state kind of regional approach to returning to normalcy. Jason, we'll begin with you. Doing this in concert with other states, or is New York going to act independently of those other states? How is this going to work exactly as you see it in New York State?
Well, we're going to have this fairly wieldy committee of the chiefs of staff for the governor, as well as economic appointee and a health appointee to this committee that will supposedly collaboratively decide how we will reopen the region. Not exactly sure how that's going to work, because even within our state, we see various rural areas and urban areas, let alone among the various states, there's going to be some issues. But at some point, we do have to be reopening this economy. We cannot continue like this. You know, every time we shut down a system or if you hear the grinding of the gears, they're meant to keep going.
Yeah.
And we've got to start reopening things. And that's what we're looking for.
Yeah. State House and State Senate in Harrisburg approving this measure that would gradually return to normalcy. Many small business owners say if they don't open soon, they are never going to reopen. But the governor is going to veto that effort despite being passed in both houses of the General Assembly. Michael, your reaction to this?
It's really tragic that the governor is going to do this because there are so many costs, personal costs, mental health costs, costs in suicide and addiction that come with the decline in economy and poverty. And that needs to be weighed. And with the governor's veto of Senate Bill 613, he's basically saying to the people of Pennsylvania, I don't ultimately care about those things. And that's tragic when 45 states are following the principles that are in Senate Bill 613. Following federal guidelines, our governor thinks differently, and that's sad.
All right, and that will have to be the last word this week. But, hey, read that article about how to honor God and government in the midst of this pandemic. Jason, where can folks do that?
AlbanyUpdate.com.
And learn more about this Wolf veto on opening up Pennsylvania. Huge story this week. Where can they find that, Michael?
PAFamily.org.
All right, terrific stuff as always, guys. Of course, Capital Connection airs Fridays during the noon report or online anytime at fln.org/news.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. You may not want to hear it, but I need to tell you, we've got more snow coming up. A disturbance that will be tracking across west to east through southern Pennsylvania tonight will bring rain and snow to the area this afternoon and tonight. For this afternoon, where it is not now cloudy, it will become cloudy. And we will have precipitation arriving as rain and snow spread from west to east across the area. High temperatures, mid-30s to the mid-40s. The mix is all snow tonight. Heaviest accumulations, 3 to 6 inches perhaps, over the highest summits of the Twin Tiers. Elsewhere through the Twin Tiers, about 1 to 3 inches. Lesser amounts close to Lake Ontario, as well as south of I-80 in Pennsylvania. Low tonight, mid-20s to the low 30s. Tomorrow, clearing skies in the 40s. Some clouds gather Sunday, a late-day shower, the high in the low 50s.
Thank you, Kevin. Have yourself a great weekend. And finally, at noon, another story of a COVID survivor, this one in Orlando, Florida. Michael Kevin was on a ventilator and in a medically induced coma. Then he received plasma from a donor that survived. Nurses FaceTimed his wife and two kids as he came out of that coma.
Daddy! Hey, Kevin, it's Stacy and Cole and Lauren and Grayson.
Only 2 in 10 people that go on a ventilator survive.
He's crying? Oh, baby, I see you. I see you.
We love you. You're going to beat this, okay?
We need you.
That doesn't pull at your heartstrings. 72 hours later, he was off that ventilator. And now, heading back home to his family, surviving COVID one story at a time. And that is the world we live in this Friday. Thanks for coming along. Have a wonderful weekend. I'm Brennan Dixon, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.